702.
WhatsApp us on 072-702-1702.
And Jason Burnick is joining us on the line, and we're going to have that conversation about the festive blues. And he's a life coach. Jason, good evening, and thank you for joining us. You're joining us via Zoom this evening, I understand.
I am. Good evening, Gashwal. Good to be on.
Great stuff, mate. I mean, the scenario that I set, and you know, sort of as an introduction into this conversation, I mean, is that a fair representation of where we find ourselves? Where year in and year out, this time of the year when I'm on radio, one of the big conversations that I tend to have is around loneliness and people finding themselves alone. And Christmas Eve is not sort of the joyous occasion, or even New Year's Eve is not the joyous occasion for so many people, because unfortunately, they're quite frankly lonely.
You painted a dreary picture, and I was very excited to come on, and I'm feeling somewhat sad now because you just reminded me of the reality that a lot of people are facing. So yes, I've come on as a, in inverted commas, expert in certain spaces and how people are feeling and what to do with it. But sometimes I forget it. You're speaking to me as I sit in a game lodge in the Pilansburg, and they gave me a room so that I don't disturb my family. So I'm not one of those people that are lonely. I'm not one of those people that have been adversely affected in any number of ways from coronavirus or lockdowns or anything you're talking about. But two facts are reality. The first is that this is a depressing time for many people around the world this time of the year. Mm. And the second is that circumstances as a result of the viral pandemic and all of the results thereof or consequences thereof have exacerbated and amplified the experiences that people are having. And we, even from a game lodge or a beach or next to the beach or the mountains or wherever one might be sitting, I don't think any of us can, within good conscience, turn a blind eye to this reality.
And it's a tough one, because I think let's start off with, you know, the scenario that is persisting year in and year out, something that I hear every single year where someone will call in and say, look, either they're widowed, they're elderly, their children have moved on, their children have immigrated, they themselves find themselves alone in an old age home, you know, to use a cliche, or the reality is they may just, you know, may have lost over the years, and people have disputes, they have disagreements, they have misunderstandings, they have different life experiences, and many years later, decades later, the son, the daughter, assuming that there are sons and daughters in the mix, don't want anything to do with you anymore, so they've moved on with their lives. Mm-hmm. These things unfortunately happen. How do you cope then, especially at this time of the year where you're quite literally inundated with messaging in and around friends, families, and loved ones? How do you cope when you are faced with a permanent situation of being left all by yourself?
Look, if you're inundated with messages, you're in a good space. Some people are so lonely that they're not receiving messages from anyone or don't have anyone to send messages to. So if one is in a situational position where they're in communication with friends, family, and loved ones.
Just to clarify, what I meant is, you know, you switch on and it's the Hallmark Christmas movies, and it's always loving mummies and daddies hugging.
Oh, it's all around you. Okay, yes, not your personal
Yeah, you go to a mall.
You're
and
in
it's,
dire circumstances.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. And I can drag one down. I can. So the thing is, just a tiny bit of background to allow you to understand the approach that I have. In my business, I mostly work with entrepreneurs and business owners. And if they're not those two, they're usually fairly well-placed in corporations. Now, the reason I position that is because the experience that I have working with that subset of people works to set an example for anyone in any position that might find themselves in this particular situation, which we can call their current mindset. Possibly perpetuated by circumstances. Now, the other thing is that those that I work with have largely not been adversely affected by the COVID situation. So I just want to place that there, because we may have referenced that later when we pull some things together. So the big thing is, and now there's a parallel between what's going on during this festive season and the situation and the people that you've described, between what happened with business owners, entrepreneurs, executives, whoever they might be, during during hard lockdown and beyond. And I am hesitating to use the word trick here, but really the mindset that you have to adopt is one of optimism. At the beginning of the lockdown, I spoke about the fact that our familiarity in the form of our foundation had all been ripped out from under us in an instant. And that speaks to mostly structure and routine. And as a result of that, I was talking a lot about negativity, positivity, and optimism. So negativity is easy to understand. Positivity is too. But the thing with positivity is that it's short-lived. You're positive to a point until you run out of energy. Optimism is the one that can really keep you going, which is a resolute belief that there's light at the end of the tunnel. Now, I'm conscious that you referenced older people that have lost loved ones and something maybe financial happened to them years ago and they're in a situation. But the same thinking applies, is that the optimism has to be some resolute belief that there's something on the other side. And we can call this thing that stands between where one is and the other side as the struggle. We can call it the struggle. And this trick, the word I didn't want to use, that one has to adopt as a mindset, is that you need to think about who you want to be on the other side of the struggle. And if you can understand who that person is and how that person shows up, try and come from that place. That can even pull one out of a semi-depression. And I'm not going to bang heads with any psychologists or therapists over here, because that's definitely their area of expertise. But what I'm saying is that if you have something that's so powerful that it motivates and inspires you to move forward, instead of just dwelling or wallowing in the position and the circumstances in which you find yourself now, then it can change you from idle to being in action. And you can start to pick up the pieces and move forward towards something.
So what is that thing that you're moving towards? Because again, going back to it, and just for a simpler understanding on my side that I need, I'm a very much a straightforward, simple, straight down the middle type of personality.
With an LLB, I believe. Did I get you on that one?
Big time. I was about to say some of my friends, and they might not like this, would say the greatest simpletons of all. But ultimately, you know, in real practical terms, how does that then operate and work for me in my practical sense? Let's say I do find myself in that lonely situation, what do I have to look forward to? Because alternative, usually you're looking forward to the alternative, and I don't know if that's necessarily the healthiest mindset, but what you will find is Gershwell is lonely, so therefore the opposite is to find company, people to hang out with, and therefore that's what I become optimistic about, that one day I'll make friends, I'll make new connections, I'll reconnect with my family, my long lost family, etc., etc. So how do we then break that mindset?
So there are really two ways of doing this. And the first is to set some kind of a vision, a mission, a goal, whatever you want to call it, could be massive, could be simple, as something to pull you in that direction. And as a result of it being powerful enough or inspirational enough, you'll probably move into action and move toward that. The fact is that however you do it, you need to do the work. So I have to discount depression from this, because someone who's depressed is helpless and hopeless. And even if you ask them a question like, what do you really want? They're going to find it very, very difficult to answer that question. These are two of the very, you know, you talk about simpleton. Again, I'm not a psychologist, so I can't diagnose it. But when I'm looking for coaching clients that work well with me, and I suspect that they are moving or somewhere anywhere near toward depression, I'll ask them those questions. Do you ever feel helpless and hopeless? And if I don't get a response to the question, what do you want, or they struggle to find a response, then it's very difficult to work with them as a coach. Then I would refer them elsewhere. So again, going back to what I was saying, is that if you have a goal that's strong and powerful enough, you should be able to swing into action to move toward it. But sometimes there's some struggle just in trying to develop that goal. So sometimes you just need to get into action, and eventually you'll figure out what you want. The thing is that this intimidates a lot of people, because they may be in a state, they may be in a situation, it may be historical, meaning that they've been in this phase of their lives for a long time, even if it's something as simple, so to speak, as loneliness. They've been alone for a long time. It may be very difficult to get out there and meet people. But let's take that as an example. So someone's elderly, they're slowly running out of money. A lot of their friends have died. They're living in a retirement village. It's not the most inspirational place to be, but they did put up a Christmas tree and their lights, and that's kind of festive. So there's a glimmer of hope over there. But fact is that they are surrounded by people. Now, if one of their objectives is to not be lonely, or they recognize that they are lonely and they don't want to be lonely, then the objective or goal that they can create around this is to make a friend. I'm keeping it so simple here, but it could be, I would love to make a friend. And, you know, even when I say it like that, I can feel it. If you could see me, I'm gesturing like I would love to make a friend. And I can feel the impact of my words when I say that. Mm. And if someone truly believes that they would love to make a friend because that's the antithesis of being lonely, which is their current reality, then maybe that would have them open their eyes and their ears to their current situation and realize the possibility in what they're saying. And they have to see that. They have to see that beyond their immediate reality is the possibility of, the example in this case, having a friend. And all they have to do is look around them and take in their circumstances, which is, I am in a retirement village or a retirement home. There are people around me. They may be old, but like me, they've lived lives. They have experience. They have stories to tell. Many of them, who knows, could be highly qualified, highly educated, highly experienced. They could have hilarious stories that could pull me out of this. Who knows? Maybe at 85, I'll even meet someone who I have an attraction to, and I can spend so much time with, and I could develop companionship, which is what a lot of people want when they're lonely, is not only a friend, they just want people to be with. So if I were to now condense what I just said into some simple formula, would be recognize your current reality, take stock of your circumstances, look at what's on the other side of that, loneliness, friend, set some kind of goal around this. I wouldn't get too complicated around it now, but some kind of goal, I'd like a friend. Have it inspirational enough to move you into action, and then figure out what that action is. That's where you have to do the work. No one is going to get over their festive blues or their what they might describe as their own personal depression. No one is going to move beyond this if they're not prepared to do the work. And that's where so many people get it wrong, is they're sitting there, and I have to use this word again, wallowing in their circumstances, but not prepared to do the work. It's like anything else in life. If you want money, you got to do the work. If you want to live a life, you need to do the work. If you want to grow a business, you need to do the work. If you want to grow your career, you need to do the work. This has to do with personal circumstances as well. If you want to get out of the situation that you're in, whatever that might be, are you prepared to do the work? But what is it that's driving you forward, and what is it that's pulling you towards something?
I mean, I find it quite fascinating. And as I said, you've broken it down so simply and so easily, because ultimately that's what those barriers are. It's nothing too complex. It's nothing too amazing. You know, you don't have to go through a hell of a lot of mental aerobics to be able to break through those particular barriers. And I think if we can start adopting that, that will make your life a hell of a lot easier and able to, you know, for you to move on and to continue to cope.
Yeah.
And thanks for that. But let's look at the other scenario, and that is what this year has brought to us, because there's the opposite side of the coin where I may be living in an old age home because I'm elderly, but I have regular contact and access to my family, or not necessarily in an old age home. I'm living by myself. I'm living separately from children, grandchildren, etc., but I have regular contact with them. They regularly visiting me. I'm seeing them. I see the kids grow. It's lovely. It's wonderful. But now COVID-19 comes along. My family actually cares for me, beyond just wanting my company, but they're concerned with my health and my safety. And as a result, people are saying, listen here, grandma, grandpa, we're going to stay away from you because comorbidities, we could be asymptomatic, we could actually literally inadvertently kill you through this horrific virus, and therefore
yes,
we'd rather stay away and give you an opportunity to stay safe until such time that this wave blows over. But now here's Christmas, and lo and behold, you're stuck by yourself. And the reason why I'm bringing that scenario up is because I actually got a call months ago from someone who was in tears on this very platform, telling me a story of how she, in where she was staying, in the estate that she was staying at, had lost so many friends from COVID-19 because she was elderly. They were elderly. They contracted the virus and they passed away. And she was literally calling the show with one simple request. Can I have someone to talk to? Because I've lost the people that I, you know, that I got to know and that I had regular contact with. And I mean, that's a tragic and difficult situation and a new situation for so many people.
Gosh, well, tell me, who's listening to the show? The elderly person or the elderly person's child or grandchild?
I think all of them, all of the above.
Okay, okay. So can I respond to that from at least two different angles then?
By all means, mate.
Because, okay, great. So from the elderly person's point of view, I think most, in my experience and from what I've seen and heard as well, is that most elderly people understand the risk of COVID-19. They understand that they are, simply because of their age or whatever ailments may come with that age, they are at higher risk. And they should be, to a point, expectant of friends, family, loved ones to say, listen, we're going to stay away from you for your own safety and your own health. And as you so rightly pointed out, it is kind of to save your life. We're going to stay away from you. So as hard as it is, that elder person should be thankful. As tough as it is, as heart sore as they may feel, they need to understand their loved one's reasons for it. They're not going, listen, we're taking this opportunity to not spend time with you because we want to go to Platt, because they can't sit on the beach there anyway. So maybe we can sometimes...
Yeah, Grandma, your walker, you know, you're going to struggle with a walk on the beach. So you stay at home, we're going off on holiday.
So for that person, for the elderly person, the grandma, the grandpa, if they can find it in themselves to be understanding and forgiving, it would already settle them. Again, they hurt and they, you know, because of their own circumstances and the phase they are in their life, it really, I don't have a better word than this, but it sucks to not be able to have those people around you at this time. But if they can find it within themselves to forgive those people, to understand, to communicate the understanding and actually thank them, but then look at what's possible around that, because although they can't see each other face to face, or the decisions were made one or two or three of the ways, there are other ways that they can do it. They can be included in Zoom. I know it's artificial and it's not the same and they're old school and it's just not the same. But they don't have to not be there. They can be there virtually. They can check in 400 times a day. There's so many media, tech media that they can check in with. You know, they can be on WhatsApp and have a Zoom call, then they can hop into Skype because someone is somewhere else with other tech. And they can have their family, well, it's pretty too late for that right now, but, you know, I suppose virtually as well, they can have their family help them get set up on that. So it doesn't mean that they're not going to be together. It just means that they're not going to be within physical kind of touching distance. There's still opportunities to be in contact. You can still spend Christmas in real time together, just in a virtual capacity. Now, from the children's and the grandchildren's perspective, it's not too late for this. There's so many things that they can still do. They may have said, sorry, Grandma, sorry, Grandpa, we're not going to be able to see you this Christmas because we don't want to kill you. I wouldn't have said it like that, Gershwald, but you did. So, you know, and that's the reality. Let's not joke about this. But this is the reality. But what about sending them a surprise courier? What about surprising them with a gift? What about having someone else that their grandparents never expected show up on the virtual call, like from another country, that would be a big surprise to them. Maybe a grandson that they haven't spoken to in 4 years because of the age difference. You know, they're just estranged because of their different generations. I sent one of my clients, two of them own a confectionery business, and they created a range of Christmas macarons, cakes and cupcakes, an incredible range. And I sent an email to all my entire list about 2 weeks ago saying, because you're my clients, here's a code for this business and you can order these. And I had a lot of people saying, but we're on holiday and we can't do it because these guys are Joburg based. It's a 50 kilometer radius delivery. And I said, well, do you have people that are still, because I'm from Joburg, do you have people, loved ones that are still in Joburg? Yes, a lot of people we know are staying behind. Well, send them a gift. You know, it's that kind of example. Just because you're not in the same city, town, or even the same building as someone, there are so many ways that you can communicate your love with someone. You don't have to be right there. And I get that there's also the fear that you might never see them again because they're old. But that's also something we have to live with. Imagine, like you said, you infect your grandmother, that affects another 100 people at a retirement village. How are you going to deal with that?
I hear you, and that for me. No, I mean, and that's such an important point that you're raising there, and I think that's the issue. Or, you know, the messaging, again, going back to that overall Christmassy holiday season messaging all around us, it's not about your gift, it's about your presence. And now, you know, you have to rethink that. And may, as you had pointed out, maybe courier a gift. So now it is actually the direct opposite, because the presence may be the actual danger in this particular instance. And I think also, you know,
the
there's
presence,
so many...
Not the presence, not the gifts.
Yeah.
All sanitized. The gifts must be sanitized before they're delivered.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and let's hope that the courier company, the guy's wearing his mask and they sanitize his hands and all of those things.
We have to have a sense of humor about it, don't we?
No, for sure. And that's the thing. I mean, it's a coping mechanism. It helps us through this whole process,
sure.
Isn't it? But I mean, apart from that, I'm just thinking that it's this year is what people have been talking about as a new normal, right? And the question is, how then do we adapt into the future? Because there's a higher likelihood that my children are going to have to see their great-grandmother less because of this new normal. I mean, you and I are talking in the midst of a new strain of this virus, a second wave, all kinds of stuff happening. And you know, that does raise some serious concerns and worries. And we're not just thinking in terms of, obviously our conversation is largely in and around the holiday season, because this is, I guess, when there's that heightened sense of need to be with family, need to be with loved ones. But I think that we have to think about the new normal. But the other aspect that I was also thinking of is, this is actually a darn stressful time for a lot of people as well, even if you have access to your family. You know, I was thinking of you know, some of the conversations I've heard on this platform as an example, where the lockdown left a lot of people who live together and are supposed to be family members and having a loving relationship together, right? It locked them in with each other, and that heightened conflict is one example. The other thing is for LGBTI and GNC persons, some of them were forced to, you know, to reveal themselves quite literally, because now I'm locked at home with my homophobic dad and I happen to be gay, and now we're confronted with,
oh, wow,
you know, me being gay and therefore ABCD. You know, those are some of the conversations and things I think that we didn't necessarily think about as well. And that's why this time of the year, and you know, there's always the joke that we make, and again, going back to the humor thing and finding the humor in all of it. Everyone, I think almost anyone can talk about or make reference to the one drunk uncle in their family. At times you laugh at him, at other times he brings you to tears. Let's be quite frank about that. So those are the two things that I'd like to chat about after this. I'm just taking a quick break, and then I think we get back to those two, if you don't mind.
Cool.
Lekker, man. As I said, at the moment, we're speaking to Jason Burnick, who's a life coach, and we're trying to navigate our way through the holiday blues. As I said, not an old crooner's song, but much rather a realistic situation for so many people. 28 minutes ago before, or rather 27 minutes ago before we get to 10 o'clock.
702. Call us on 011-883-0702.
25 minutes to go before we get to 10 o'clock. As I said, we're speaking to Jason Burnick, who's a life coach, and we're talking about the festive blues and how to navigate it, how to get through it. So I think, Jason, let's talk about this new normal that we talk about on a regular basis, something that seems to be a lot more ingrained than what we would like it to be. And just as we thought we were out of the woods, we're right back in the woods. And we hopefully, you know, hopelessly lost. You know, and a bear is chasing us down with COVID-19. So how then do we navigate this, considering that this is probably going to be the new norm, where social distancing, an effort to protect loved ones and those near and dear to us, might mean that we see less of them. And even if we do see them, something that's innately human, the need to hug someone, to kiss someone, to hold them close, to be near them, to hold their hand maybe during a conversation. All of those things are now out the window because, again, we're trying to keep them safe.
I promise you, I just made this up right now. Well, when you're in the woods, maybe you should build a cabin. If the woods are our new normal, then we have to learn to live with them. So whatever the new normal is, which is changing, by the way, you know, we're in a new normal now, but whatever this new normal is, will be a new normal, and then a new normal, exponential, because things are consistently changing. You know, once vaccines land, I think things are going to change. I was speaking to someone 2 days ago that's out here from Dubai on holiday, and he was talking about their restrictions and how Dubai's just completely geared to getting the vaccine so that they can get back to business, because that's Dubai, right? And we are living in a completely different social economy right now, and I believe that that's going to continue to change. And we've adapted, I think, as humankind, we've adapted very well so far, just in the 2 weeks or so that we had of social distancing before hard lockdown began. There was almost an immediate shift from hugging or shaking hands or kissing to knuckles or elbows or ankle taps. And a lot of that has changed. So we as a human race, I think, have been realistic and pragmatic in our adaptation to whatever reality we face. And I think we'll continue to do that. I think because of the word pragmatic, we also got to consider two things. The first is the law and whatever sits behind the law, specialists, politicians, doctors, everyone that leads us in this so-called fight. And we probably need to take that leadership. And the second is our own opinion, because sometimes law is interpreted and applied in different ways, and certain people and people of leadership, whether they're in a business or a family or even politically, may interpret certain things and apply them in a certain way. So I think we as a people, a global people, need to be coherent with the leadership that helps us to live and save lives at the same time. But we also have to always question how we want to live our life within the leadership that's been, pardon the expression, but thrust upon us. So the result of having certain parameters thrust upon us is that we have to live our lives in a certain way. But the reality is that all of us continue to have choice of how we live our lives under that banner. I'll give you an example. It was June or July, I was speaking to someone whose daughter was, what is the word? Au-pairing a five-year-old. Mm. And that five-year-old was too scared to walk out the house into the garden because he thought he was going to die. Now, that obviously comes from the parents. And I think that's an example that stood with me for some time, because the parents listened to, heard, experienced what was going on in the world, interpreted that in one way or another, and then led their child in one direction or another. Maybe they were right, maybe they were wrong, but I think it's a great example to illustrate how we need to be pragmatic in our receipt and our application of everything that is around us. We also, in addition to this, need to remember the old model of spheres of control. Are you familiar with that? The concentric circles. Does it ring a bell?
Ooh, no, it doesn't.
Okay, so very
maybe midway through the conversation, I'll be like, oh, yeah, that stuff.
Okay, so three circles. If you can imagine that you sit in the middle of the innermost circle, and as you move from the innermost circle to the outer circles, your ambit of control lessens. So what it's saying is that what you have complete control over is you. Your emotions, your way of thinking, how you experience the world. What you don't have control over is, to some degree or another, other people, even your family, friends, colleagues, and going further out, the environment, markets, politics, and even further out, global economy and governments around the world. Mm. So if you understand that model, so many people look out to the bigger thing. In this case, it's kind of coronavirus, politics, government. and they try and control that in whatever way they can in their own world. But we have very little control. What we can control is ourselves and how we receive information and show up relative to that information. Also, how we feel is as a result of how we think, and we're doing a lot of thinking during this time. So just think about that. The way we feel is as a result of how we think. So if we can control our thinking a lot more, we can feel different about whatever it is that we need to shift our feelings about.
I mean, that's very profound and it's very honest. And I was thinking that just as you were speaking, those concentric circles that you were talking about is familiar, you know, the type of stuff that you learn through, whether it be through corporate training or whatever the case may be. But just very quickly, I want to throw in, with 18 minutes left in our conversation, if anyone has a quick comment to make or they want to call quickly, a question or whatever the case is, please do give us a shout on 011-883-0702. Alternatively, 021-446-0567 if you're calling us from Cape Town. Of course, also for those of you on WhatsApp, 072-702-1702. And I didn't mention this, but I tweeted and I Facebooked at the beginning of the show, hashtag Aubrey Masango Show. That's what you're looking for there on either Twitter or Facebook. And we can also interact there. And of course, SMS is 31702 and 31567. If you have any statements, questions, queries, whatever we're talking about right now, please do chime in short, sharp, straight to the point very quickly. I mean, and Jason, that for me is absolutely stunning, because I guess some of it is not relinquishing control, not giving up, but understanding what ecosystem you occupy. You know, I always say to people who know me well, I think I've even used this example on air before, is that a lion living in the Kalahari can't be envying the life of a lion in the Serengeti, you know, where the wildebeest literally jumps down its throat and this poor lion in the Kalahari has to go around looking for, you know, a six-month-old gemsbok carcass. Ultimately, you live within the space that you're in. You have to accept it and you have to adapt or die, literally, you know, to quote another famous saying. But I mean, ultimately, you need to adapt. You need to be able to navigate the space that you find yourself in. And I guess it's a case of getting the mental equipment to be able to do that.
We have to. And, you know, a lot of people find it difficult to develop that mental capacity and then go and do it. Sometimes you just got to do it and the mental capacity will develop over time. Like confidence, you need to cheat it. Confidence is a result. You need to do what you need to do. And as a result of succeeding or even being on that journey, you might develop a greater sense of confidence. But also you use the word adapt. You know, another popular word during this time has been pivot. Especially in the first few months of hard lockdown, it was all about pivot. It became about a bit much. And I remember being in conversations, avoiding the word pivot, but then pivoting and coming back to it, going, it's actually a very appropriate word, because no matter what the pandemic or economic crisis is or whatever has been put in your way, the goals shouldn't change. If you think about business, and more specifically within business, maybe a sales function, why would you as a business want to change your sales target? You get that there's a viral pandemic. You get that markets crashed. You get that your competition is suffering too. But too many businesses respond to it by going, oh, let's cut the target by 25%. That doesn't make sense. Now move it away from business and sales and just move it back to your life. Why change your goals? You need to pivot and change your strategy still in pursuit of those goals. I get that there are nuances and there's some really tough things that have been thrown in your way. But if you really want to continue to move forward and survive and not thrive, to use another two words that have become very popular, the way to do that is to pivot in pursuit of your original plan. Because if you don't do that, you're going to remain where you are, or worse, go back. And that's what unfortunately has happened to a lot of people. And, you know, even in industries that are really, really tough, that have been hit so hard, like the restaurant industry, some restaurateurs have turned around and they haven't moved away from restaurant or food. They've just done things differently. And they may not be thriving as they would year-on-year growth as if we didn't have a viral pandemic. But they are in a profit situation, which is remarkable, because so many of them were effectively shut down for 6 months. I accept that there are industries like South African companies that rely on global tourism that are in deep, deep trouble. But I work with the people. I don't work with the businesses. And going back to the word capacity, that's what I work with, is the ability for people to form the capacity to be who they need to be, to do what they need to do. And if the result of that is the survival of the business, then that's what we're working on.
I mean, it's an important point that you're raising there, and I'm not cool enough to use the term pivot, so I'm still stuck in you know, in the old angle. But I mean,
just picture yourself going on the back foot and then moving forward again.
But the interesting one that stands out for me then is what I mentioned earlier on, was the situation whereby you are actually surrounded by people. And they're supposed to be a support network. These are people that you're affectionate towards. You love them. You care for them. Family members, parents, partners, children, et cetera, et cetera. But sometimes that in itself, sadly enough, could be more of a curse than a blessing for some. Where you find yourself in a situation whereby you're just not happy with the situation as it stands. And that's quite frankly because you have, you know, the drunken uncle, you have the critical aunt, you have all these people that are just making your life really difficult. How do you cope with those circumstances where that gives you the festive blues?
Well, the blessing and the curse is in the immediate situation. So when you're locked down in a home with a drunk uncle, that's a curse. The blessing on the other side of that is, well, now I actually realize that I need to get out. So let me be very direct about this. What a lot of people have learned during this time in business, personally, with their family and with their friends, is that there may be some people that they need to remove from their life. And that's the reality. Abusive people, negative people, because people like that do not help you to create the life you want. They stand in your way. So if you're locked down with someone that doesn't respect you, someone that abuses you, someone that talks you down, then situation reliant, I guess, or I get it, at least the reality or the consciousness has become that you need to leave, you need to leave that situation. If it is the drunkard uncle that that resides in the same home as you, well, now that we can move around, get out of the home, go get a job, earn some money, and get out of that home. If you're in, if you're in a marriage and that marriage is toxic, get out of the marriage. Yes, there may be kids involved, well, work that out. If you have a bad business partner, get out of that. If you have negative friends that have a negative rhetoric toward what's happening in the world, in other words, they're moaning all the time and holding you back from being positive,
or even in your own life.
I mean, optimistic.
Some friends are, you know, toxic towards you. Even, you know, any decision you make, any move that you make is always questioned and re-questioned. And why did you do this? Why did you marry so and so? Why are you doing this job?
So,
you know,
yeah, gosh. Well, the reality is that you need to surround yourself with people that support you. And people that drag you down are not going to just kind of negate you in the moment. They're going to hold you back in your life. And this period may have been a time when one realized that they have toxic people in their life. And instead of going to a place of support and feeling lifted, they keep walking in front of a firing line. If you feel that way, anyone listening to this, if you feel that way, if you feel like you're being dragged, if you feel like you're being fired at, if you feel like you're being dragged down, held back, whatever it is, consider these relationships very, very carefully and think about whether you want to remain in them. Because remaining in these relationships with certain people might prevent you from living the life that you want, and you're never going to move.
But I guess, I mean, notwithstanding that it's not an easy decision to make, because I think you've pointed it out already, is that there's all kinds of practical considerations that one is to take into account. There may be financial dependency. There may be the fact that you, I don't know, you're a teenager and you're still going through school, and you can't say goodbye to mommy and daddy, you know, just on a whim. But at the same time, also, if you are in a situation whereby you are able to make that decision, then it's probably in your best interest then to make that decision.
So I'd like to pick on the words, apologies, but the decision is very easy to make. If you're in a bad relationship, get out. The actions that you need to take, the process, the steps, and so on, those are difficult.
Yeah.
But once you've made the decision, the strategy starts to formulate. Even if you are a kid at school and you need to leave your toxic family, with respect to anyone listening, the steps one takes may be, I'm going to study really hard. I'm going to graduate. I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to get out of this.
And that's the thing, because as you said, part of the making up your mind, part making the decision is the easy bit. actually going through with it and execution is generally where the problem comes in, and it may come through your own insecurities as well. I think that's also a worthwhile conversation to have, sort of the mental inner demons / inner voices that one then has, you know, those internal conversations that no one else can hear, but that only you are privy to. I mean, those are extremely important, and those tend to set the tone. I mean, going back to especially being a life coach, you do a lot of work with people who are in the business space, who want to start businesses, who want to do something in that space. But I'm sure you've heard this a million times over, where someone says that, listen, I went all the way, but then I thought to myself, what if I fail? You know, I thought to myself, what if things go wrong? I have a wife, I have kids, I have a bond, I have car payments to make, I have, you know, all kinds of things. And so it's always those internal voices. How do we overcome those internal voices? Because it could also come, you know, those internal voices most certainly have an impact at especially this time of the year, with everything that you and I have discussed, whether it be the fact that you're not, you don't have access to family, whether it be the fact that you are finding yourself alone, that you, or even if you are surrounded by family and you are surrounded by loved ones, but they're not necessarily loved ones and they're not very supportive, they're actually having a harmful impact on your mental health and your general sense of well-being. I mean, surely all of those things put together as well has a massive impact, in that there are those internal voices that then ring through. I can't pick up the phone and call my son, because we had that massive fight 30 years ago and he's never forgiven me. So therefore, it's pointless for me to reach out to him, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things have a massive impact on you.
For sure. Well, my quick response is, if that's what's going on for you, get a coach. If you're in a position to hire a coach, hire a coach, because the coach will help you to understand your belief systems and anything that might be holding you back. And whatever's holding you back, which is limiting beliefs, might go as far back as childhood if you're an adult. And you need to start to unwind the story that you've created for yourself, or someone else created for you and you started to believe, whatever that might be. And if you can go back as far as the creation of whatever that belief is, that's really useful. But then the job that you need to do from that point is start to create a new story. And that's what a coach helps one to do. We don't work in the past and kind of unpack it and everything. At the most, we'll go back to the origin, but then the immediate question is, well, what do you want from here? That's what's most important. Where do you want to go from here? You understand your circumstances and you understand the reason for your circumstances. Well, what now? That's really important. Where do we go from here? And then you start to look forward and create that vision and whatever strategy and steps you need to take in pursuit of that vision. This is a very simplistic version of this that I'm sharing with you, but I think it's a good kind of mental diagram for anyone to understand.
No, I think it is important, and I think it is definitely a way to work through that process. I mean, just as a final thought for someone that, you know, moving away from the main thrust of our conversation thus far, but for anyone that's looking at a life coach and speaking to someone in that space, what is it that you guys do? Because I think it's also very important. I think you made it clear that you're not a psychologist, so you're not playing in that particular space, but what assistance do you provide? How do you go about that process?
So the big difference between, and this is the way that I differentiate for anyone that's confused between therapy or psychology and coaching, is that psychologists really look at the present, or they look back and try to unpack and understand why, and they help people work through or with things. Whereas a life coach, again, may go back to understand the origin of, but our primary function is to set the pace to go forward. So we work with vision, strategy, mindset, skill set, and whatever else may be. So I'm listing them on my fingers because I have 14 and I've listed four. But whatever else we might use to support our clients in going forward. So with me working with business owners and entrepreneurs and executives of corporations mainly, I don't go near their business. I'm not going to work with them to strategize on their business. And the more dislocated I am from their business, the better, because I work with them and how they show up in their business. A lot of them come to me because they go, I've reached this point in my life where I've done well, I'm successful. But as I look back, I realize that I've been neglecting things. I neglected my family. I've neglected myself, nutrition, health, exercise, hobbies, and so on. Mm. Or I'm kind of at this precipice of my life and I'm looking forward, asking what's next. So ultimately, a life coach at least this is the way I practice, is I work with my clients to create the life that they want. How I do that is to have incredibly powerful conversations with them that challenges their belief systems, that challenges the way they see themselves, see others, see the world, and help to provide them with perspective on how they show up in those relationships. Through those conversations, they'll have incredibly powerful insights, which with the people that I work with often immediately leads to powerful actions.
I mean, sometimes those are hard conversations based on what you have described there. I mean, those I'm sure that they're not always easy, lovey-dovey, oh, that sounds wonderful, I'm on the right path type conversations. It might be very challenging.
No.
It might be.
And that's, yes.
Yeah.
That's the difference between what I would describe as a good coach or not a good coach. A coach that's not very good will have a nice chat. A good coach will have a challenging conversation with someone. They won't let them wiggle out of that conversation that they've created. I mean, I'm in the business of serving my clients, not pleasing them. They get pleased by their employees and their family and their friends. I serve them to support them in creating the life that they want.
100%. Very quickly, a website or something to refer people to?
www.successcoaching.co.za.
Awesome stuff. Jason, thank you so much. All the best to you, mate. Thanks for chatting to us.
Gosh, well, thank you so much. Take care.
Only a pleasure. Only a pleasure. 2 minutes to go before we get to 10 o'clock.